and contemporary and feminist art scholar, is here to present Screen Eroticism 1967 versus 1992, Exploration of Female Desire in the Work of Carol Lee Schneeman and Pippilotti Rist. This Tuesday evening presentation is in conjunction with Amelia's visit as the Green Honors Chair Scholar to TCU, where she follows tonight's lecture with the lecture Aesthetics, Identity, Art History, tomorrow at 5 p.m. In the North Mouty, in North Mouty, room 132 at TCU. And while this is provided for the TCU students, it's my understanding that the public is welcome. So I encourage you to take advantage of that opportunity. Amelia is professor and Pilkington Chair in Art History and Visual Studies at the University of Manchester. Besides teaching, she works as an independent curator and writer. Among her most important exhibitions are Photography and the Photographic, Histories, Theories, Practices from 1994, and the controversial Sexual Politics, Judy Chicago's Dinner Party in Feminist Art History from 1996. The latter was organized at the Arm & Hammer Museum in L.A. and accompanied by an extensive catalog that is edited by Amelia. Her essays have been published in impressive periodicals such as New Feminist Criticism, Art, Identity, Action, and she is the author of several books including Postmodernism and the Engendering of Marcel Duchamp, 1994. Which was published in 1994. Also, Body Art, Performing the Subject from 1998, Irrational Modernism, A Neurasthenic History of New York Dada from 2004, and Self-Image, Technology, Representation, and the Contemporary Subject from 2006. She also co-edited the anthology Performing the Body, Performing the Text from 1999, and edited the volumes Feminism and the Visual Culture Reader 2003 and A Companion to Contemporary Art since 1945 from 2006, which includes 27 original essays. Her current projects are co-edited the co-edited volume Perform, Repeat, Record, Live Art and History, and a book tentatively entitled Identity and the Visual. As a writer, Amelia collaborates with magazines such as Art History, Art Journal, Art and Text, Meaning, and Oxford Art Journal, as well as being the co-author and co-editor of Women House, which, of course, references Woman House. Women House is a web project reexamining feminism and domesticity in contemporary culture. So as is apparent here, Amelia is very busy and very accomplished, and we are very fortunate to have her with us here tonight. So please join me in welcoming Amelia Jones.
Thank you so much, Terry. And thanks to Fran as well, just for bringing me to Fort Worth. I wish I could say I have seen a little bit of the town, but as you can tell, I have a terrible cold. So I hope you can hear me in the back. Is my voice projecting all right?
We can't see you very well.
Oh, that's all right. You don't need to see me. So I'm going to talk in a kind of, normally I would try to project a little bit more, but as long as you can hear me. So it's a real pleasure to be here, and it's really interesting to see this museum for the first time. So I think we can lower the lights now. This paper addresses a profound technological and ideological shift in the visualization and conceptualization of eroticism in screen-based culture from the 1960s to the 1990s. Through a comparative analysis of two major feminist screen-based projects, Carol Lee Schneeman's Fuses, which was completed in 1967, and Pippilotti Rist's Pickle Porno, or in English, Pimple Porno, in 1992. By focusing on these two pieces, each produced by a key figure in the history of contemporary and feminist art, the paper seeks to cast light on three major and interrelated shifts in the following areas. Number one, feminist and broader social conceptions of eroticism and sexual agency. Number two, the articulation of a vital female erotic power through specific screen-based media, 16-millimeter film with the Schneemann Project and video with the Wrist Project, each having its own potential to render the human subject differently. And number three, artistic strategies for exploring the relationships among the body, the camera, the resulting screen image, and space. Ultimately, by showing how each artist pushes technological capacities of each medium, film and video, to render different modes of female sexual agency, the paper will point to broad transformations in beliefs about sexual identity and embodiment from 1967, when the Schneemann film was made, to 1992 with the Wrist. The screen, cinematic versus televisual, is the operative pivot, both in a literal and metaphorical sense, for the visual culture works at hand. And understanding how screens function to articulate sexual subjects is essential in understanding how Schneemann and Wrist produce counter-possibilities of erotic subjectivities in Fuses and Pimple Porno. Dominant versions of subjectivity or ways of being in Euro-American culture enacted themselves partly through the screens of everything from painting through photography and the mass media, position us most often still through binary codes relying on oppositional conceptions of identification, gender, male, female, sexuality, hetero, homosexual, race, white, not white, ethnicity, European, otherwise, class, nationality, and so on. These screens also position us literally as spectators in front of perspectivally constructed spaces, Albertian windows onto worlds themselves presented as truth. As such, we are encouraged to believe that when we watch screens, we are in some way witnessing the truth. At the very least, we tend to absorb screen images as driven by bodies we engage with through reiterated codes of identification that in turn structure our ways of being in the world. In contrast, although they both nominally narrate erotic encounters between two people who appear to be male and female, and thus to convey what on the surface appear to be heteroerotic relations, both Fuses and Pimple Porno explore and produce embodied erotic possibilities for viewers which counter these conventional binary structures via screen-projected imagery. In the case of Fuses, this imagery is produced through the pellucid, glowing transparencies of 16-millimeter film, although it should be said that the film is often viewed in a degraded VHS version marketed by Mystic Fire Video. But it was made as a 16-millimeter film and originally intended to be viewed that way. In its original version, Fuses is a dense 23-minute-long collage of abstracted images of a woman and a man, Schneemann and her lover of then 10 years, John Tenney, making love as viewed by her cat. In the case of Pimple Porno, a 12-minute-long PAL format video, the erotic bodies are conveyed via the even bright tones of digital video projection. Originally produced as an analog videotape to be viewed on a monitor, the work is most often today transferred to digital video and projected for public display. Working through the specificity of how the erotic screen bodies in each piece are conveyed and can be engaged, this essay will then conclude with thoughts about what the two projects tell us about different modes of envisioning and enfleshing the erotic screen subject in 1967 versus 1992. These thoughts will, of course, be provisional. The screen bodies I interpret will be evoked here through words as possibilities, not as fact. Part of my point is that screens make available visual fields, in this case, eroticized bodies, which open out to the other who views them, but do not legislate how these bodies read or are identified. Screens are hinges between self and other, both literally and figuratively, not final sites where a body can be seen and known in some fixed way. And here I'm just showing you a clip from Fuses, which of course you're seeing as a digital projection, but it's originally a 16-millimeter film. And I'm just going to read a description as you watch the clip. I've watched fuses about 20 times, once, oh joy, as a 16-millimeter film projection, many times on the 23-minute VHS version of the original film I've shown to classes of young and eager students, who generally find its erotic textures quite radical, even in the 21st century. And most recently, I've watched it as a newly re-edited and remastered, now 29-minute-long version on DVD with original footage added by Schneeman. But now, in the fall of 2007, before the remastered version is available, I'm sitting with my lover curled together on the sofa, watching it in preparation for writing this paper. The monitor of our small screen attached to the bulky body of a late generation analog television, one of the last that will ever be manufactured, unfurls the film's skeins of deeply colored montages. I remember watching the film version, a glowing rectangle of flame on the wall over there. I found myself sutured into it. I was zipped in as I encased myself in a tight-fitting garment that molds itself to my flesh. With larger-than-life acts of heterosexual penetration hovering in my view, the hands rubbing gleaming taut muscles of wet folds of skin, I'm enfolded in its erotic logic as my lover enfolds me in his embrace. Still, while not fully rendering the limpid jewel-like colors of the film version, the video version pulls me towards it with its flesh encounters. Schneeman notes about fuses, quote, "I wanted the bodies to be turning into tactile sensations of flickers. The film is a painterly tactile translation edited as a music of frames. That's why it is collaged, cut, and baked. This tactile manipulation of the film stock, which turns it into a skin, makes the film itself embodied. I view the bodies making love there, the rhythmic thrusting of one into the other beautifully rendered, if in fragmented form with the scratched and scumbled surface of the film, mitigating my full access to the bodies. I also experience the screen itself as enfleshed, as having its own logic and depth. As skin, the rippling contours of which signal a body or bodies writhing underneath." Yes, with the cat watching all the time. Schneeman unfurls herself like a wave, both powerful and receiving. Her body is wet and red. The whole film is colored in saturated rubies, tangerines, and at some points cool blues, stroked deliciously by her lover. His penis, glory be, we see the male organ without its explosive eruption and detumescence being the sole point of the narrative, as in hardcore porn. It appears again and again, lovingly rendered both as an object of potential female and or queer male desire, and as a fleshy but slick with juice and vulnerable rod that works in relation to her invaginated receiving body. Wet is the operative feeling, wet and pulsating, alive, electric, sexed, the bodies, but also the body, the flesh of the screen itself. But Fuses is hardly simply a personal exploration and eroticism attached to the vicissitudes of political, unattached to the vicissitudes of political history. By the early to mid-1960s, Schneeman is an artist and simultaneously an activist working against the U.S. government's actions in Vietnam, training male friends how to avoid the draft, and others how to deal with police brutality, which was common at anti-war protests in the USA during this period. She was also creatively driven by a sense of outrage to produce projects directly linked to the war, particularly Viet Flakes and Snows. The 1967 kinetic theater event Snows, an environment in which her 1965 film Viet Flakes was projected. Both Snows and Viet Flakes were created, as she has stated, quote, "out of my anger, outrage, fury, and sorrow for the Vietnamese," unquote. The goal of producing Snows was, quote, "to concretize and elucidate the genocidal compulsions of a vicious, disjunctive technocracy gone berserk. The grotesque fulfillment of the Western split between matter and spirit, mind and body, individualized man against cosmic natural unities," unquote. Along with projected atrocity images from the Vietnam War as collaged in Viet Flakes, Schneeman used film in the Snows event projecting through dual projectors, making live and filmed bodies collide in space, quote, as integral to live performance, handled as tactile, palpable material, unquote. So too infuses the body of the film enacted through the erotic bodies of lovers, scratched and made into flesh, symbolizes the manipulated flesh of bodies elsewhere. While Fuses is in no way directly a commentary on Vietnam, its visceral approach to embodiment clearly parallels Schneeman's strategic attempt in the other projects to unveil the political and military violence perpetrated by U.S. troops abroad. I feel Fuses in my gut as an attempt to redeem the flesh through an eroticism that seeks to transcend the violence of nations through the personal euphoria of the orgasm. And notably, the soundtrack to the Snows Project by John Tenney included the noise of trains punctuated with the sounds of orgasm. This accompanied the live performances in which, in Schneeman's words, performers were aggressor and victim, torturer and tortured, lovered and beloved, unquote. This approach of activating live and film bodies as flesh across Schneeman's work during this period, I can only say, is very 1960s. While harrowing and visceral, particularly in the case of Snows and Viet Flakes, it is also very uplifting if one takes this attempt at transcendence, undoubtedly utopian and willfully essentializing. What other way, after all, did there seem to be to call Americans back to their bodies in an era of imperialist invasion on the part of the USA? Within its brutal historical context, a context in which activating the body erotically meant to reclaim its capacity for positive union over its tendency to wreak bloody havoc. And again, you're going to see a clip while I'm talking about pimple porno. The footsteps of a high-heeled woman who was apparently white and thin, walking over an urban grating, approaching a man who looks to be from East Asian background, dressed in a blue suit. Her eyes in close-up, her eye in close-up sees him. It's the female gaze. Their hands clasp are solarized into a glowing meshing of skin and bone. He hands her a rather excessive pink flower. Her body falls onto an artificially bright blue surface. And I apologize here that I should have thought to hook up the sound because there's a wonderful soundtrack, but at the same time that would compete with my reading the paper. So you have to imagine there's a female voice, wrist herself, singing in the background. As infuses, human eroticism is paralleled by the carnality of animals and the burgeoning of nature. In this case, freewheeling animal locomotion. Periodically throughout the film, we see birds flying across the virtual sky of the televisual screen, landscapes, technicolor with the hyped colors of a vacation brochure, and flowers layered over, under, or within the contours of the two bodies, which in turn mesh, caress each other, and twirl in the strange gravityless space of the televisual box. Riss turns her camera around, refusing its authority as a stationary eye and opening its purview to an intergalactic space in which landscapes turn upside down and bodies float, rotate, and spin in the dimensionless space of the monitor. And you can see how much more simulacral it is. It's very artificial. Bodies floating in space, a space textured through the glorious skeins of technicolor, ripples of skin, landscape, water. The infinitesimal line where one body begins and another ends is completely effaced. There are no borders. There is no binary separating man from woman, black from white. His apparently Asian body and her apparently white body look equally luminous and sensual, in some cases distorted through a fisheye lens, in others eaten into by billowing layers of color. A hand strokes a thigh. Whose hand? Whose thigh? Globes of fruit, tangerine vibrant, against a downy-haired, pitted skin of legs. Whose legs? Mark human skin as infinitely soft compared to the rude, rubbery, and pockmarked skin of the citrus fruit. The screen itself dissolves at one point, shimmering away into an orange-yellow interference pattern, a televisual grain that's like technologized skin. Rist's project is profoundly televisual. In the version I'm studying, it's played on a television. It is made like television. It is about television, not so much network television as its attenuated, more creative televisual forms, such as MTV, the music television station founded in 1981. Or, to some extent, it plays on artists' videos. The melting of the bodies together is the melting of experience into the screen, the flesh into the televisual, that people born after 1960, like myself and Rist, I was born in 1961, she was born in 1962, have learned in our bodies to accept as the way things are. Call this real or call it simulation, either way it is how we know the world around us. As much as we allow ourselves to be lured into the world of the televisual, we know we feel in our bodies that the televisual is artifice about artifice. The smell of fire rarely accompanies the image of a fire visible on the screen. In pimple porno, the orgasm between the man and the woman is signaled by an increasingly frenetically paced visual and aural extravaganza. And that's where the sound is very important. A feast of images of lava, fire, meshing bodies, a hard cock floating through a flower-filled field, a cunt opening itself into and as the screen. Synesthetically, fire, simulacrally rendered via televisual representation, both symbolizes and is signaled as hot, with hot linked to the heat of consummated desire. One experiences the images of fire, the explosive hot effects of which are exacerbated by the heated, rapid cadences of the music and the overlaid sounds of people moaning in pleasure as having a metaphoric temperature. We can feel the texture of the sex between the man and the woman. Perceived racial, gendered, and sexual identifications condition how we experience synesthetically view and apprehend bodies in the world, in real-time space or in representations. Pimple porno, with its seemingly white female and Asian male bodies, mixes up our Euro-American expectations about how such bodies would interact sexually. The woman is at least as aggressive in her desire-driven touch. The man is both sculpted in his physique, masculine, and ephemerally sensual and desiring. The white person is an object of desire as well as colonizing subject, and the Asian person, his penis shown hard in its active pursuit of his object of desire, full with agency. At the same time, the seeming visible differences in the two bodies beg the very question of the binaries through which we give bodies and other kinds of interactions meaning. Thinking we know a body is that of an Asian man or white woman is already a fraught enterprise of categorization based on presumed identifications connected with visible codes. Rist participates on a creative register in the growing interrogation of beliefs about identity and of the role of identity politics in conceptions about what visual images mean. Pimple porno is a visual examination and refutation of the dominant Euro-American idea that we can know what or who we see based on our interpretation of visual cues. As Peggy Phelan notes in the introduction to her important 1993 book, Unmarked, quote, "Identity cannot reside in the name you can say or the body you can see. Identity emerges in the failure of the body to express being fully, and the failure of the signifier to convey meaning exactly. Identity is perceptible only through a relation to an other, which is to say it is a form of both resisting and claiming the other, declaring a boundary where the self diverges from and merges with the other. In that declaration of identity and identification, there is always loss, the loss of not being the other and yet remaining dependent on that other for self-seeing and self-being," unquote. What Rist, like the most interesting artists and visual theorists of our time, makes clear is that visibility is never enough. Thinking we can see, we see what we know what we see, belies the constructedness of the visual field, not to mention the contingency of our interpretation of what we see, a seeing that is always dependent on multisensory input. While life is now arguably fully representational and simulacral, our experience is still embodied, synesthetic, not only visual and aural. But saying it is fully embodied is not saying it is knowable or in any way essentialized in relation to the body. So much pimple porno explores through its confusion of boundaries between bodies and identifications. Thus, in pimple porno, as in all of Rist's work, the interconnection of image and sound is crucial, as is the way in which she narratively depicts touch across these multiply identified bodies. Much of pimple porno is devoted to images of bodies touching, rubbing, and caressing. The touch of skin and the touch of sound mesh bodies, blurring their boundaries. Rist's eerie soundtrack, which includes her singing in German with her feminist punk group Les Reines Prochaines, is a very haunting side effect to the visual imagery. As my German is rudimentary at best, I have no idea what she is singing, but it feels filled with longing, sounds of moaning, chanting, noises from a hyped-up version of nature, birds twittering, water rushing, and various techno-sounding versions of acoustic instruments conditions our experience of the bodies on the screen. Pimple porno exemplifies the way in which Rist's work evokes what Laura Marx calls a haptic visuality, a feminine rather than penetratory and perspectival visual relation, wherein the viewer is encouraged to engage with the surface of the image as having substance, as if it could be touched haptically. Haptic visuality encourages an intersubjective eroticism, as Marx argues, not only in the case of pimple porno between figures or characters within the work, but between these bodies and ours. Marx notes, quote, "What is erotic about haptic visuality then may be described as a respect of difference and concomitant loss of self in the presence of the other. It is a giving over to the other," unquote. Elsewhere, Marx has noted, quote, "We cannot help but change in the process of this kind of interacting," unquote. Giving over to the other through synesthetic visual encounters can open up a process of change. This is the radical potential offered by pimple porno's erotic televisual scene. And it is a radical potential signaled in an early nascent state by fuses. Schneemann's and Rist's two projects, I argue, are profoundly complementary in effect and in apparent motivation, but mark two different feminist eroticisms, themselves linked to two different relationships to visuality and to two different technologies of imaging the self from the two different periods and locations in which they were produced. To some extent, they can be viewed as informed by two different generational approaches to the erotic body. Schneemann was born in 1939, and as noted, Rist was born in 1962. Schneemann, of course, in the United States, Rist in Switzerland. Their approaches are profoundly informed by the very technologies that end up conveying them: film versus analog video, and then digital video projection. They are also informed by an attitude towards the political, towards representational media, and by equally feminist attitudes about women's agency in relation to the visual field. Attitudes that are critical but also celebratory of ways of articulating women's sexual pleasure. Both artists respond critically to the Western history of positing a mythical-centered subject of vision, one who is implicitly white, male, and heterosexual. The location of vision and the subjectivity of the viewer led ultimately to a new regime of knowledge in which meaning and value would no longer be viewed as existing out there, inherently in objects, but as constituted in reciprocal relation between the perceiving subject and the object. The shift away from the idea of the meaning of the text is generated from an originating author to the visual agency of the viewer, which is linked to the insights of a lot of post-World War II philosophy, particularly in post-structuralism, marks the difference between most visual works made before the 1960s and many works made afterwards. Schneemann's fuses straddles the two belief systems. As my analysis of the work makes clear, she is central to our apprehension of it, both as we see her within the text and as we imagine her authorial agency producing the text. Rist's pimple porno, in contrast, relinquishes authorial coherence to a greater degree, locating the meaning of the eroticism in our embrace of the bodies on the screen, bodies that we may associate with her, but that don't seem to be her or even to stand in for her. To different degrees and in different ways, Schneemann's and Rist's works are thus exemplary of the kind of visual art produced out of this new understanding. They mine the capacity of film and video to open out the reciprocity between seer and seen. The remainder of this paper will tease out technologically and ideologically driven differences between Schneemann's and Rist's projects. While Fuse straddles older and newer modes of screen culture, it still clearly occupies the tail end of a modernist trajectory in the history of art and film, one originally taking shape in the historical avant-gardes of the teens and 1920s in Europe and resurfacing in the post-World War II period, particularly in the context of North American cinema with the work of filmmakers such as Maya Deren and Stan Brakhage, with whom Schneemann worked before making Fuses. This kind of avant-garde work seeks to disrupt the visual field via strategies of montage and disjunction in order to distance the viewer, ultimately aiming to shift and contest dominant beliefs. In the case of Schneemann's film, the key belief system addressed is that related to the positioning of women as objects of heterosexual male desire, but not as agents of their own sexual experience and identification. At the same time, one of the most important things about Schneemann's work and Fuses in particular is that it crosses over this kind of avant-garde strategy with a feminist strategy of deploying what Laura Marx calls the skin of the film, the film's capacity to engage viewers in a circuit of identification that is embodied and potentially highly politicized. This strategy and its feminist variant produces bodies as a means of precluding the simple fetishization of the woman's, and in this case, the man's body as well. In Schneemann's Fuses, both the male and female body offer potential sites of identification and desire, motivating the viewer to position herself differently in relation to heterosexual difference and thus perhaps to challenge the structures of fetishization that are foundational to conventional Hollywood cinema. Schneemann was one of the artists who developed this strategy in the most dramatic and successful way. Fuses moves us towards what comes to be defined as a postmodern cultural production, one that is not avant-gardist in any simple fashion, not simply oppositional or distancing, but that still attempts to intervene in or create friction in relation to the structures of capital and subject formation in a critical way. By manipulating the flesh of the celluloid itself, in Schneemann's words, burning, baking, cutting, and painting it, dripping the footage in acid, building dense layers of collage held together with paper clips, unquote, Schneemann broke apart the conventional film text literally, enacting her own agency as making an active sexual subject. Schneemann, in this way, enfleshes the film itself, literalizing Marx's concept of the skin of the film on a material as well as on a narrative level, its potential to spark embodied engagements. As flesh, Fuses precludes the distancing effect necessary for fetishism to take place. The skin of Fuses enacts the skin of Schneemann and Tenney as they make love. The enfleshed movie de-objectifies the lovers' bodies, turning them into limpid surfaces that are also depths. And yet there's a tension between this effect and our identification of Schneemann as the author of the film. It is crucial to stress as well that Schneemann's relationship to the binary of gender identification was never clear-cut. Unlike many feminists working in the 1960s and 70s, she did not seek simply to reverse the poles of subject male and object female to empower women as subjects. Rather, in this early work, she confused the binary altogether, while at the same time keeping male and female as intact entities, involved as they are in a clearly heterosexual romance. Schneemann's activation of herself as a subject rather than only object of the visual field in Fuses is thus not at the cost of the other with whom she makes love. She's not interested in objectifying Tenney as a way of reversing the usual relationship. Of Fuses, she emphasizes that she worked in complete collaboration with Tenney, situating his participation, quote, as both object and subject. My goal was pointed. I really wanted to see what the fuck is from a woman's point of view. and locate it in terms of a lived sense of equity, we have to remind ourselves that throughout the 60s, only men maintained creative authority. Women were muses and partners, unquote. Schneeman's project thus complicates dominant models of interrogating structures of sexual difference in feminist film theory from the 1970s and 1980s. Film, as many feminist theorists from Laura Mulvey onward have pointed out, is predicated as a medium on the binary logic of heteronormative sexual relations and identifications, but infuses, as film theorist David James argues, quote, a new copulation between the filmic and the erotic is traced, in which female sexuality is enacted in a practice of mutuality, unquote. Fuses blurs the boundaries of the binary and thus interrogates the cinematic itself, as well as heterosexual gender conventions. It does this partly through its character as a deeply painterly, rather than seemingly strictly photographic and indexical film. As noted, like Brackage, Schneeman manipulates the very film stock itself, turning it into flesh. The scratched and rubbed celluloid through which light is projected onto the screen moves and gyrates and pulsates like erotically charged patches of flesh. While it is materially and sensually resolutely cinematic, through this meshing of flesh and screen image, Fuses refuses to simply render the bodies indexically as somehow representatives of clearly demarcated bodies in the real. In this way, while Fuses is cinema, it radically moves towards, while not fully embracing what I will call a televisual sensibility, one newly available to American artists coming of age in the 50s and 60s, just as televisions become ubiquitous in American households. Fuses include some cinematic landscape views, notably of Schneeman running across a beach, but it is primarily structured through close-ups that interweave and layer the bodies of Schneeman and Tenney into and as their environment, pressing them into the screen and thus into our space. The film thus merges certain cinematic structures, which would be a more typically landscape or window view, with what at the time was a relatively new televisual approach to representing the body in close-up, with camera angles that render the body as if pressed into the screen. With Fuses marks one of the earliest and most successful instances of the enactment of what Marx calls haptic visuality. The screen in Fuses becomes a site of exchange, both within the film's internal narrative and between the images on the screen and the viewers. Excuse me. Speaking of embodiment, it's always there. Laura Marx argues there is an erotics and haptic visuality, which indicates, quote, a respective difference and concomitant loss of self in the presence of the other. It is a giving over to the other. Expanding on the potential opened up by Fuses, Wrist's Pimple Porno is a further exploration of the potential of televisual screen space to enact multiply identified bodies that mesh and intertwine, that merge both with the surface of the televisual monitor and with the paradoxical illusory space behind it, which seems both infinite and contained by the box of the television monitor. But Pimple Porno pushes the dissolution of the binary logic of fetishism even further than does Fuses. In Pimple Porno, the embodied three-dimensional space of the monitor parallels the embodied yet simulacrally rendered, dissolved, solarized, twirling in space bodies of the lovers. Wrist's piece draws on the erotic content and visual and editing strategies of Fuses, but pushes this content and these strategies further in the direction of a radically disorienting televisual screen texture, which we are encouraged to give over to the other, to recognize via a haptic visuality the impossibility of remaining outside the image, as one is to some extent forced to do in viewing a projected film. This giving over takes place technologically via the specific spectatorial mechanisms made possible through video art, as well as ideologically in terms of identification. While we give over to otherness in Fuses, the otherness is still marked in terms of conventional and heterosexual white middle-class versions of sexual difference, as articulated through the fundamentally modernist medium of cinema. In Pimple Porno, the otherness is metaphorically marked in terms of a sexual difference that is understood as determined in relation to the highly marked terms of racial difference. The meshing of flesh is marked in terms of a web of interrelated identifications in Rist's piece, where the woman, standing in for Rist herself perhaps, is marked as racially, ethnically identified rather than neutral or unmarked. Rist articulates bodies that are identified but not knowable, as if in answer to Peggy Phelan's argument about identity cited above. And again, Phelan is writing this actually right about the same time Rist is making this film in 1993, and she says, identity cannot reside in the name you can say or the body you can see. Whiteness was invisible to most white feminist artists, critics, and art historians working from the 1960s through the 1980s. As feminist film theorist Marianne Doan has put it, quote, what can a white woman know about racial difference or oppression when her social regime is constituted as the denial or evacuation of racial identity, unquote. A question to the point in Schneeman's and other white feminist projects from the 1970s through the 1980s, including, I have to say, my own early work. While the majority of feminists working in North America and Europe in the 1960s and 1980s were white middle-class women who thus didn't or couldn't see beyond their whiteness to explore the structures Doan identifies as co-articulating sexual and racial difference, by the 1990s, working in Central Europe, Rist is able to articulate a feminist screen eroticism that foregrounds, without overemphasizing, racial and ethnic identifications as constitutive of gendered and sexual identifications, with these identifications, as Phelan suggests, never fully knowable through visual cues. The dissolving of binaries into complex multiple networks of interrelated identifications is related to the specific representational mode through which pimple porno was made and is displayed. Technologically, pimple porno offers a related but ultimately different experience from that offered by fuses. As noted, Rist grew up with the ubiquity of television, handheld video cameras, and by the mid-70s into the 1990s, VHS players and MTV. As noted, she was herself the member of a female punk band called Les Reines Prochaines from 1988 until 1994, and her work is deeply informed by the aesthetic of the MTV generation as well as by the history of artist video. Although elsewhere in her video work, pieces such as I'm Not the Girl Who Misses Much, 1986, and Absolutions, 1988, Rist scrambles the video signal in order to play with the texture of the interference, which ruptures the integrity of the bodies on the screen. From all appearances in Pimple Porno, Rist does not, in this case, mess with the representational medium at the level of its technological formation, that is, at the level of the signal itself. She does manipulate the image, however, using various strategies of solarization, fades, and other distorting techniques that render the bodies both more visible as central tropes and less stable as material entities. And again, at many moments, we are unsure which body we are viewing. While it is now often projected digitally on a large screen, Pimple Porno was made for a monitor and remains resolutely of the box. The bodies take on dimensionality as they twirl in televisual monitor space, not as they mesh into a projected film image as in fuses. Video viewed on a monitor encourages a particular viewing relation. There is at least a perceived intimacy with televisual screens that prompts those who make television shows or those who make art videos in the days when these were confined to monitors to produce different narratives which tend towards fragmented stories that adapt to commercial breaks and the vicissitudes of everyday life as it interrupts television viewing in the home, but also structure the narratives through much more intimate kinds of images which are often close up. In the monitor-based piece such as Pimple Porno 2, the bodies are perceptually contained in what is experienced as a piece of furniture, at least, of course, until now, when many people have flat-screen televisions, which are actually mounted on the wall as if they were works of art, which is quite disconcerting development. Placed in the box of the monitor, the video screen is a container. As Rist notes, the video monitor swallows up the viewer. Quote, "At first you look at the box, at the screen or projection, but when you concentrate on the sequences, you feel as if you're in the box, behind the glass, within a wall. You forget everything around you and concentrate completely on the box. You're swallowed, reconquering the space inside the TV set. That's one of my aims," unquote. If classical Hollywood film labors to position the viewer so as to purvey a traditional binary structure of subject and object with the filmic body over there, then television, as produced in the centers of the entertainment industry, seeks to suture the viewer but in a different way, via positioning itself as furniture but also as conveying stories that swallow the viewer up, in Rist's words, bringing her into the televisual world as a space of truth. If Schneeman's project purveys the body of the film as flesh in order to extend but also disrupt avant-gardist strategies of rupture, opening the door to a meshing of bodies and screen space, Rist's project pushes this further. Reconquering the space inside the TV set, as she puts it, using tools from rock video and from earlier avant-garde film projects such as Brackage's and Schneeman's, Rist produces liquid bodies, the texture of whose flesh is reciprocally defined in relation to the grain texture of the televisual screen. Fuses is a radical work that enacts bodies as what Laura Marx has called the skin of the film, drawing us into a cross-gendered, if still apparently heterosexual and white, identified relation with a man and a woman making love. Manipulating the film itself, Schneeman turns the movie into a body with which we engage to find ourselves in a different space vis-a-vis female agency. In contrast, Pimple Porno enacts male and female bodies that are apparently raced as Asian and white in the pixelated depths of the video monitor. In so doing, Rist's video gives up the clear and politicized activation of female artistic agency, dissolving authorship and relinquishing the meaning of the work to the viewer, in order to produce an erotic haptic visuality that, to repeat Marx's formulation, offers the potential of inspiring respective difference and concomitant loss of self in the presence of the other. It is a giving over to the other. In other words, Schneeman, as had to be the case really in the 1960s, strategically retains the master-slave binary that structured identity politics at the time and articulates her own agency clearly within the film, while Rist, partly due to being empowered through earlier works such as Fuses, is freed to interrogate the very oppositional terms of this binary. Schneeman's Fuses works through the self-other dialectic of dominant white middle-class heterosexual relations, enacting on a personal-turned-political level the way in which such lovers can trouble the easy binary structuring both sexual difference and photographic and cinematic imaging technologies. Rist's Pimple Porno gives over to the other, the viewer, and metaphorically the potentially non-white, non-heterosexual other left out of dominant Euro-American models of difference, even until recently feminist ones. And finally, in conclusion, if, as Marx notes elsewhere, that we cannot help but change in the process of interacting, then both of these projects offer ideal openings for such change in the cutting-edge versions of the technologically and ideologically inflected languages of their time. Thank you. I realize that was very dense, but I'm happy to entertain any questions, whether they're general or specific or comments. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could kind of locate both these artists in terms of the video art canon and people like Bruce Nauman and Nanjung Paik, the Korean, you know, the real...
Yeah.
I mean, can you kind of maybe differentiate and maybe draw some connections there?
Well, I think Schneeman was working, obviously, really before Paik emerged in the late 60s and early 70s. So I suppose you could say in a parallel development in New York. Rist is actually quite interested in Paik and talks about her debt to him, and particularly in terms of his use of the monitor before the, you know, really in the late 80s into the 90s, video art starts to be almost entirely digital projection. But Rist emerges at a time where she's still quite interested in the monitor, and it's really Nam June Paik who's, at least in her view, is the important figure there. So.
Yeah, I have a couple of comments now and a question. The composer that Schneeman was involved with in the 60s is James Tenney, not John Tenney.
Oh.
So you should correct that.
Okay. Thank you.
The other comment kind of thing is that Schneeman was probably involved with Nam June Paik when he was still doing performance stuff in the Fluxus group.
Yeah,
before
that's
he was doing
right.
Video stuff.
Yes.
So that they were both related to what Paik was doing.
Yes, they were both working in New York in the early 60s.
But my question is, I appreciate the analysis of these particular pieces and the comparison of them, but for me, both of these artists sort of do other kinds of things than what they're showing in this work, and that makes this sort of a special case kind of analysis for me.
Mm-hmm.
So many of Schneeman's pieces were interactive and intermedially connected to her performance pieces that looking at a piece like this that's pretty much just a flat projected piece is a very special kind of piece for her, given what her subsequent career ended up being in a lot of ways. And similarly, a lot of Rist's later pieces do involve projections and installation kinds of pieces in which the image is just part of what's going on, too. So, I mean, both of these are, you're looking at a real specific moment for each of the artists, and it's your analysis of it's really an interesting analysis, but it's just at those moments for those particular artists, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I'm not really interested in, or I'm not arguing that these are exemplary of the artist's career at all. I'm really just taking these two screen-based pieces at that particular moment. But absolutely, I mean, Rist is actually much better known for those, as you say, those video installations, which are quite large and environmental. So she's been one of the most important people in developing that installation projection type work. Uh-huh.
Are you looking at these two examples in terms of how they are presenting bodies and that relationship of the body to the flesh, as you talk about it, of the screen? I mean, is that the reason for taking these particular pieces and looking at them together, and also that span of time?
Mm-hmm. Did everyone hear that question? Oh, she's just asking kind of what motivated me to take these particular pieces, which I guess kind of expands on your point. I mean, I have to say I wrote this paper because I finally saw Pimple Porno. I had already written, there's a chapter in the self-image book on Rist, but I'd never actually seen Pimple Porno until about, I don't know, a year ago. And I saw it, and I was just blown away by how much it seemed like an update of Fuses. So I have no idea whether Rist even saw Fuses, and I've chosen not to ask her directly about that. I'm more interested just in this kind of parallel in terms of these very particular moments within a screen-based imaging practice, but also within feminism, and yes, exactly, in terms of these, the different technologies and how they convey the body, but also, I mean, in a way, I feel like I could go on for hours about the differences because they're so similar in the obvious level of what they're doing, but then there's so many differences in terms of how the bodies are conveyed, some of which are technological, some of which are narrative, some of which are editing. And so for me, it just cast a lot of light on what I saw as a number of different shifts from that, what I see as a crucial period, the kind of late 60s, early 70s, and then what starts to happen in the 90s.
Because I think it's so interesting the difference in perspective in terms of attitude toward the bodies, but their presentations of, and then just, you know, just the visual information that Rist has that Schneiderman did not have.
Yeah.
The difference in time.
Well, the ease of, you know, the new editing technologies and so on make it a lot easier, really, just in material terms to play around with images and create all these effects.
And just visual vocabulary, just the, not so much what's technically available, but just the way you see the world. Because like you were saying, that MTV, I mean, that vocabulary is so apparent in Risk, I think that's stunning.
Yeah.
This relates to that a little bit, but also to the notion of the authorial agency. I think you indicated that Risk was the videographer in the work. Is it known who filmed the Schneiderman? It wasn't a fixed camera.
It actually was Schneiderman, yeah. And I haven't gone into the details with her about how she set up the camera or what have you. I think she shared the camera with James Tenney. So it was quite a collaborative, but it was very much her idea and her concept.
Literarily speaking, would it be possible for one to construct a similar paradigm using this binary idea of the white male and whatnot? Comparing the traditional Western style of a protagonist penetrating his way through a story as to a things you might see coming out of China, where the story is more ubiquitous and there's no specific main character. Being less of a specific concentration on one person and one plot line following through a story. Is there a distinction between the feminine masculine relationship of one style of storytelling compared to the other?
Well, to my mind, I don't know much about Chinese film except the big films that make it to the Western screen. And I think that's a really interesting point. You know, I would have to study a lot more of the film to see whether there was indeed some kind of real cultural difference there. But if that's the case, yeah, that would be a perfect clarification of what's very specific about Hollywood film. Many dozens of film theorists have pointed this out. Many of them feminists have pointed out the way in which it's predicated on not just a particular structure of the film image, which is based on perspectival painting with a singular point of view, but on a single male, heterosexual male protagonist. So that's not, you know, obviously not my point. I'm not making that up, it's not my original point. But yeah, I think it would be really interesting actually to, and I know there are some post-colonial film theorists who have looked at that issue in relation to other film traditions or other image-making traditions which might not have the same kind of authorial, central point of view focus. Any other questions? Well, thank you. Thanks for your questions.